Ahoy, mateys! Welcome aboard the Shallows, the pod designed specifically for all you 10-team and Smart League managers out there. I'm your captain, Eric Henriksen, alongside chief mate, Carson Picard. Carson, how are the Seas faring today, this first show of the second half of the 2026 season?
Well, I was really scared earlier in the week that it would not happen for me, Eric. I was telling you a little bit about it before the show, but I came down with a fever, a really strong one earlier, and not for home runs, but one of where it was like laying in bed, very shaky and achy, but feeling a lot better. Fever subsided and very ready for the second half, a second half that I think is going to be really interesting for a lot of teams around the league.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the trade deadline. I'm not looking forward to Scuba landing up on the Dodgers, but I am excited to see what they get in return. We've talked about that ad nauseum. On today's show, we have the captain's report. We have a segment, Where Are They Now? I've been really excited to do this all season. Well, really, since like end of May. So we're going to do a segment called Where Are They Now Hitters and Where Are They Now Pitchers? And these are going to be early season darlings, the players that you ran to the wire to grab, who may or may not be relevant anymore because you have either made them staples of your lineup and they've become set and forget, or you've totally forgotten about them because they are terrible now. So, and fantasy irrelevant, really. So, before we officially leave port, we release a new episode every Friday. The audio version releases at 7 a.m. Eastern, wherever you get your podcasts, and the video version premieres on YouTube the same night at 8 p.m. Eastern as well. If you want to see our beautiful made-for-radio mugs, so be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Leave us a five-star rating, a like, a thumbs up, a kind review, and don't forget we're part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, so check out the other pods we have available. There are new episodes out daily, and visit pitcherless.com for all the latest and greatest content published daily as well. And there's a really cool tool currently in like beta-ish that we're testing, which is super-duper dope. So stay tuned when that gets its wide release, when it's ready for that. But it's, let's just say, it is the dopest of dope. When we come back, it's the captain's report. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Shallows. That's Carson. I'm Eric. And this is the captain's report. We've done some pretty long captain's reports over the last couple weeks. This one may be the exact opposite of that. This is going to be the shortest one. In injury and other news, we have one bullet point item here. It is Ronald Acuña Jr. has started his rehab assignment, if you weren't paying attention, over the All-Star break. He went over six in his first two games and then hit a grand slam in his third game. And he there's a chance that he might be activated from the injured list for this weekend series for the Atlanta Braves. He has not played the field yet, though, so he's probably only going to DH. This is a silly question. I already know the answer, but I have to ask it. We're immediately putting him back in our lineups, right?
No question about it. I mean, I think you have to temper your expectations a little bit, certainly on the stolen base side of things for Acuña, but like, come on.
Yeah. Two hammy injuries, not ideal. So yeah, maybe those stolen bases kind of fade away for the rest of this season, but it's in general nice to see him run when he, you know, had those ACL issues. So Ronald Acuña might be coming back this weekend. By the time you listen to this, he could be activated off the injured list. We are recording on Thursday, July 16th, so he'd have to be activated very early in the morning tomorrow, so probably not. Top performers over the last week. Again, one piece of injury news. Top performers over the last week, it's got to be the Home Run Derby and Jordan Walker, of course. Carson, let's talk about the Home Run Derby a little bit. I know you were running about a Aroldis Chapman fastball in terms of internal temperature. Not quite Jacob Mizorowski. If you were running that hot, I would have a different co-host today. So glad you didn't get
all right.
That high. Good.
Yeah.
We're down
for a bit there, but
we're down more toward the Ryan Weathers fastball, maybe 96-ish, 97.
I hope not Ryan Weathers, but like, yeah, we're at steady kind of a Paul Skeens fastball right now.
There we go. Not the elite Paul Skeens fastball, the lower spin rate Paul Skeens fastball.
Right. Yeah.
Let's talk about the Home Run Derby a little bit. I like I said, I know you kind of missed it, but, and I will say this, I was very skeptical of losing the clock. I thought we were going to get a lot of watch that pitch go, swing, ground ball. Watch that pitch go. Watch that pitch go. Swing, fly ball to the center, to the kids in center field. But we got a lot of excitement because it wasn't outs. It was swings. And I did not know that going into the home run derby. I loved it. I thought it was exciting. I loved that everyone was kind of close for that reason because it was swings. And man, Jordan Walker just stepped into the box and he's got such an effortless swing. It looked pretty. What the highlights that you were able to catch, what did you think?
I think a couple things really stood out for me. Number one, the ease of which hitters were able to, when they found it that they liked. I mean, the conversion rate. I would like to see that as an overall metric of like, what was the conversion rate on swings to home runs? I mean, it was generally around half from what I saw. I mean, it was really, really good. And the ones that they actually did hit, I mean, I saw a couple go in the third deck. I saw, you know, upwards of 470 plus. You know, those are absolute bombs, and those are fun to see. That's what people like in the home run derby. The raw number of home runs, which was what was emphasized, is great, but it's not necessarily as impactful, especially because you don't have the time to process it as much and the weird bonus formatting. And it also just made the strategy of who could throw the most ball. It was almost like a lot of pressure was put on the person pitching.
Oh yeah.
Or tossing, you know, rather, who could throw the best batting practice and the most efficient. And that was a not as great metric of hitter performance, although there were some great moments in the Derby from the last few years. I think this is the best format the Derby has had from what I've seen. I mean, you've seen a lot more home run derbies than I have. Ouch. How do you think this compares to the formats of the past?
Okay, so when it was out, this far exceeds that. When it was timed, I really liked the fact that everyone kind of was just trying to crank pitch after pitch after pitch, but you could tell the guys got tired really quickly.
That was a
with
big
that.
Thing.
Yeah, and that would definitely take a toll on some players immediately after the All-Star break. Like, they didn't, like, that takes a lot of energy in 3 minutes to swing at 30 pitches and hit them as hard and far as you can.
And then have another round, another couple right. rounds. I mean, you're swinging that 100 times. Swing a bat 100 times as hard as you can in right. rapid succession. It's a lot.
It is. It is a lot. I think this is my favorite format. I really liked it. I also really liked that you couldn't end on a home run. So the example I gave you before we started recording was, if on out 19 or 20 swings, if on swing 19, you didn't hit a home run, but then on swing 20, you did, like Jordan Walker. Okay, you could keep swinging until you stopped hitting homers. And that's exactly what he did to hit 6 consecutive home runs. And he did not swing in that final round until he was ready. And you just keep going. And I loved it. I loved it. I also loved how he wasn't going to speed himself up. He would, at the end of the final round, he would hit a home run and then he took 2 pitches. Catch his breath, get ready, hit it, and swing at the third one. It was exquisite to watch the strategy, too, because the swings mattered. Now, that conversion rate that you were talking about was brought down by my guy, Ben Rice. Okay? He was not good.
Well, Ben Rice, well, his father didn't really set him up too well, from what I saw. It was not great, but no. You know.
And then favorite of the pod, Jack E. Cags, Jack Caglione. Looked like he was trying a little too hard.
I saw a couple of them. I was able to catch, you know, bits and pieces. Oddly enough, when Caglione was up, and I mean, he hit a couple that went to the moon, but you know, it's, I kind of we've talked about this before. How he's like, when he hits them, but it's the contact and the ability to actually get on the ball that's the issue. Kind of is prevalent here. I think what I am interested in, and I don't know, I can't actually say anything right now, but I think, like, looking forward, or even what I want to write about and research, is like the impacts of the home run derby on hitters, either in the second half or just analyzing how their swings are, because this is now exactly how can you elevate the ball.
Right.
Think about a guy like Jordan Walker, who elevating the ball was his big concern, and he has now a swing that's completely dedicated not towards raw rate, but just, you have 20 swings. How many of these? There might be something there. It might be total, you know, nothing. It's different hitting a little looper than a rising fastball, but nevertheless.
Yeah. So that's interesting that you brought up like swing changes and stuff, because I think it was Albert Pujols in the broadcast who said that Jordan Walker had adjusted his stance a little bit for the Home Run Derby. And I found that fascinating, but also for him in particular, extremely dangerous, because it took him a few years to optimize his swing to just be a functional major leaguer, not just an exceptional player, which he is very quickly becoming. So I do worry. And of course, and he happened to be there because it was in Philadelphia. Bobby Abreu is infamous for basically ruining himself in the Home Run Derby. From what I've heard, it doesn't actually affect hitters that much. Although I would be curious about a guy like Jordan Walker, who's recently had a swing change drastic to, you know, have different results. You know, it's not going to affect Kyle Schwarber because he was just doing what he does in a game.
Right. But I think maybe a different format is, I mean, there's something where it's just like you have to swing. You don't have time to really like sit on something, but you're sitting on the pitches here. So I think that's interesting. It's something, I don't know, could be absolutely nothing, but either way, really fun event, I think, and great. Do we have to talk about the other thing, the other event of the All-Star break?
The celebrity softball game?
Not that one, although I didn't hear anything about it. I know this is one you like. How was it?
I didn't catch it.
Okay, great.
It's one of my favorite things, and I missed it. Maybe because now it was probably on some other network. It wasn't on Netflix like the Home Run Derby. And like, how am I supposed to go find it?
Yeah, that's nuts. Definitely something that's actually, it's not a baseball specific thing, but it is kind of annoying. I will say, the other All-Star Game festivities that no one talks about, the Futures Game was last Sunday. The Futures Game, which never gets enough attention. I tried to highlight it in the First Pitch podcast, and I'll take a moment to talk about that one. All the big guys were there, basically. Jesus Madé, Leo DeVries, DeVries? I still don't know. Ethan Salas. I think so. Whatever. Yeah. We're serious about success. Charlie Condon. I'm just reading off the list here. Condon was there. Walker Jenkins. A whole bunch of names. Handful of top pitchers. Cade Anderson.
Nice.
AL Futures won 6-1 against the National League.
Okay.
And I don't necessarily know if I have all the figures, and I don't need to necessarily do this now, but Futures Game needs more love, man. It's a cool thing, and for anyone kind of interested in prospects, it's literally the prospect All-Star game.
Yeah. No, I love it. I wish I remembered it existed too. I'm guilty of being one of those people that don't give it enough attention.
Don't worry. I mean, it was at noon on the same day as all the other games from Sunday. So it's like,
Yeah. There's one other thing I want to address about the Home Run Derby All-Star game. Well, I guess we don't have to talk about the All-Star game, right? Because that was 4-0. Bellinger in the first inning hits a two-run. I think he drives in two runs on a base hit and wins MVP. I mean, lame.
Sure, whatever. Yeah. Sure.
One more thing. Wilson Contreras. He's 34.
Mm-hmm.
He's having his best season. He's in the Home Run Derby. He's first, if I'm not mistaken. And he just comes out and starts cranking pitches. I never thought of Wilson Contreras as a home run hitter. He's having a career year. How overdrafted is he going to be next season?
It's weird with Contreras because he was always a pretty good hitter that played catcher, and now he's playing first base, so he can just feel free to let it fly. I feel like it's tricky. I feel like he's not going to be very overdrafted. I think he's going to be pretty, maybe I'm going to go on a limb. I think he's going to be pretty fairly drafted. I don't think this is like a crazy case of a breakout year. It's just like a guy who's a good hitter finally has some burdens laid off him. Now, granted, he is up there in age and that comes for everybody, but 36 is usually the year where things come crashing down. And obviously there's some variance there, but your mileage may vary, but looking at just the bat speed for Contreras, 96th percentile. I mean, he's been good for his whole career in terms of power. And I don't know. I have no reason to doubt him from what I've seen.
Perfectly fair. I will say, I had a thought just now and it went totally out of my head. So if it comes back, I will say it. If not, when we come back, it's Where Are They Now? Hitters Edition. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's the Savage Carson. I'm Eric. And this is Where Are They Now? Hitters. These are early season darlings. And we're going to kind of explore where they are now, who stuck around, who faded into obscurity, and who might make the leap or plunder in the second half. I had to work some sort of nautical theme in there. Plunder. Pirates. Anyway, Jordan Walker, first up on the list here. Jordan Walker, I think, is becoming a mainstay in your lineup. He's probably someone you've forgotten about until he won the Home Run Derby because he was set and forget, and don't worry about it. He's been absolutely fantastic. My main question here is not can he keep it up in the second half? All indicators point at that he can. It's where does he end up in drafts next year? And I know we're at the halfway point. There's a lot of baseball left. But why not?
Second round.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is like pick 15, I think. We're really up there. The stolen base upside isn't great, but there's still a little bit. And he's the leader in RBI in the National League. I mean, he's 6 foot, 6 foot six, 6 foot seven.
He's 6'6", 250. He's a big boy.
I mean, that's a linebacker, right? Yeah. It's not even a linebacker. Linebackers are a little stockier. Dude's massive. Tons of power. And this year, he's been great. You have no real reason to doubt Jordan Walker based on his production this year. Now, you can predict that he may regress in some fields based on whatever. That's your mileage may vary on your evaluation on him. But no shot, I think he slips past like the mid-third round, I think.
Yeah, that would have to be like a weird format for him to even approach the third round, I think. I think he's going to he's borderline first round pick right now for me. Yeah, that too. It's incredible. He has not peaked yet. This is just a glimpse into how good he can be. Now, on the flip side, at the exact same time we were getting the emergence of Jordan Walker as a force on the fantasy landscape, we were getting Cam Smith. And I remember even on this show, we said, Cam Smith or Jordan Walker? And that answer was quite obvious now as we look back with hindsight as 2020. So Cam Smith, where is he now?
He is probably well on your waiver wire. You know what's crazy about Cam Smith is, like, if you actually look, he really was not. I mean, if you look at the month splits, the surge he had in the first couple of weeks doesn't even register. It's just he had a couple like really nice games at the very start. And this is the really tricky thing. And sometimes you have, you know, not to use too many finance terms, but it's an IPO on these players. And you see sometimes it goes through the roof, sometimes crashes right down. Cam Smith, bad, just not good at all. I mean, by mid-April, he had a OPS in the 900s. It was the bat speed, obviously, there. And you think it's going to happen by the end of April, OPS in the 600s. And it's stayed there since.
Oof, that is rough. The bat speed gains that he's made have stuck. He's 98th percentile in bat speed, but everything else that I see here is just minimal improvements. Yeah, he's improved his K rate. Great. Nothing else really looks great, but if I want to play devil's advocate and say, hey, he might be better in the second half, his ex-WOBA is about 45 points higher than his current WOBA.
Right.
So there's a chance that he's better in the second half. I just don't think he's going to be relevant, especially for shallow leagues in that case. Next up on the list, I'm going to group these next three together because they've kind of gone in and out of being really valuable and really helpful. And that is Sal Stewart, Jake Bowers, and recently activated off the IL just before the break and went on another power binge, kind of like he did at the beginning of the season, Chase DeLauter. So because of that little interlude there for Chase DeLauter, Sal Stewart, Jake Bowers, and Chase DeLauter, where are they now?
I was so terrified that I missed out on Sal Stewart. And he was overdrafted by, like, relative to the ADP first in my leagues because Nate Schwartz and Kyle Bland of Pitcherless, they run the Approach Angle podcast. They were all in on Sal Stewart, picked him up way earlier than normal, and it looked like they were absolutely going to take it all to the bank. Since April, Sal Stewart has been pretty decent and has some key eligibility that makes him really useful. But in shallow leagues, especially, I mean, he's a good player. I don't think you can say he's sensational. The stolen bases have also dropped off since April. He's, you know, good, but not otherworldly, you know, like he was for a while, looking like he might be one of the best infielders in baseball. Jake Bowers, holy cow. He's been like quietly really effective.
I remember years ago, I would listen to a podcast. It was the CBS podcast that a friend of Pitcher List, Frank Stampfl and Chris Towers are on. But this was before Frank's time. There was a guy on that show. He's now just like a football fantasy guy, Heath Cummings. And Heath Cummings loved Jake Bowers when Jake Bowers was coming up with Cleveland. Like, loved Jake Bowers. Thought Jake Bowers was going to be the next, I don't know, like, think of him as like the next Kyle Tucker before Kyle Tucker was Kyle Tucker, right? Like that much fanfare coming up, especially from Heath Cummings. And it is probably 9 years later, 8 years later, and Jake Bowers is finally fulfilling the promise that Heath Cummings made to fantasy players out there all those years ago. Jake Bowers has been amazing. Look at his stat cast, and you'll think that's Ben Rice's stat cast from last season. Oh my goodness. Incredible. He's been extremely valuable.
Yeah, one of the best hitters in baseball.
Yeah, isn't that now, crazy?
It's a slugging heavy. I mean, I don't know. You can put some kibosh on it if you want, but I think it's I mean, you can't be upset if you pick them up, basically. Like, he's on your roster, you have him starting very likely. He's been great. He's been absolutely great. As have the Brewers.
Yeah. Well, it's like something is going on in Milwaukee that they just know how to fix players, and they do it on a budget relative to the Dodgers, right? The Dodgers just know how to fix somebody and get the most out of the talent that they have. And excuse me, Milwaukee seems to do the exact same thing without spending $60 million on one player. I think it's fantastic. I love it. Jake Bowers has been phenomenal. Just to quickly comment on Sal Stewart before we move on to Chase DeLauter. Yeah, he's been just about a 245, 246-ish hitter since March and April. Stolen bases have, like you said, he has four since April. He's good, but I think the book got out on him. And so I'm very curious to see if in the second half he'll adjust. That being said, 250 hitter in Cincinnati with 30 homer upside. He's at 19 right now. With those position eligibilities, first, second, and third, is valuable to have on your roster, especially in a shallow league, I think. All right, Chase DeLauter teased us at the beginning of the season. He looked like he was going to be an absolute stud, an incredible pickup. Then he didn't homer for months. Then he got hurt. Shocker. Had an extensive injury history in the minor leagues. Fractured a rib, I think, crashing into the wall or diving or something. Came back and just found the power stroke again. What do we make of Chase DeLauter? Where is he now?
That beats me, Eric. I mean, listen, here's what I'm making of it. He is someone who is pretty good when healthy and probably not going to be just a world-beating phenomenal slugger. I don't have a great analysis here, although I think he's going to be a good hitter. I feel like he's kind of like Giancarlo Stanton last year.
Oh, you know? Okay. Yeah.
Where he's like productive, decent, fragile. And I mean, not necessarily with like the 36-year-old knees that are held together with like toothpicks and tinfoil, but like pretty solid overall production in a kind of fragile-ish package. I think that's kind of what Chase DeLautner perpetually is. That's sort of my read on it.
Yeah, he's a very interesting player because I remember when we talked about him a few weeks ago, you made point like the bat speed isn't fantastic, which sort of limits the power ceiling. I'd be very interested to find out what his bat speed has been over the last 2 weeks since he was activated off the injured list. He's good. He might be a better real life player than shallow league fantasy asset. If you're playing in mid to deeper leagues, you want Chase DeLauder on your roster because he's not going to hurt you in categories that outfielders in like the 50-60 range might otherwise do, with upside to be helpful in some. So I'd say like he's good. He's my injury replacement for Ronald Acuna currently in the league that I have Acuna. So that's what I think of DeLauder in a shallow league context. That's where he is now, right? He didn't quite reach the ceiling this season that we thought he would based off that opening weekend when I think he hit 5 home runs, which was pretty nuts and an incredible way to start your major league career. Can you imagine that? It's pretty cool.
Well, obviously not, but...
Hey, you never know. All right, next few names on the list here. Ben Rice, Liam Hicks, and then everyone's favorite who thought he was going to become a middle infield mainstay, 34-year-old Ildemaro Vargas. Carson, where are they now?
I'm proud of myself for not buying into Ildemaro Vargas.
Me too. I don't buy into a 34-year-old who came out
of nowhere. He had some nice stuff. If you looked at it, if you remember the StatCast page from back then, there was a lot of red on it. It looked really nice. And I'm proud of my wisdom for not buying in on it. Vargas since April has been what, I mean, you wouldn't know, you wouldn't suspect a thing if you didn't see that, he was the second coming of, Paul Molitor in April. Vargas has been a bench bat, like at the major league level, a bench bat, completely fantasy irrelevant, which is harsh, but I think his OPS is like 600 even or something around that. It's been rough. Liam Hicks has been really good in a profile I still can't totally trust.
Sure.
It's a weird combination of low bat speed, relatively high home run total. And that doesn't make a ton of sense. I know you can maximize it and pull the ball, and that's the kind of thing that he's been doing. But Liam Hicks has been at times in my first base slot in my dynasty league because one, I just have a hole there, but also he's just been good enough as a hitter. And then he has catcher eligibility, which he's a great catcher. And then you can just hand wave everything away, plug him in, forget about it. Ben Rice is not Lou Gehrig part two, but is really good. And the last kind of few weeks have sort of reinvigorated my belief in him after a fairly sluggish, like there was like 3 to 4 week period where he was like fine and it really hurt the Yankees. And now he's back and things are going better.
Yeah. Just to touch on Liam Hicks real quick, because he was the one to sort of out of this, but obviously Ben Rice has been fantastic. So he's kind of different from these two. Ildemaro Vargas was such a flash in the pan. I shortchanged him a little bit though. He's not 34. He's 35. Okay. But Liam Hicks to me is the most interesting name of these three because he was so good early in the season. So good. And the batting average has relatively sustained all season. the power has almost all disappeared. He has not homered since, I believe, let me make sure I got the thing correct here, June 12th. So he hasn't homered in over a month. And even then, he has just two home runs since May 23rd. So that power that you were talking about that you didn't quite buy might be gone. Might be gone.
Mm.
Now, his overall stat line still looks really good. Are you trying to trade Liam Hicks?
I mean, that's so situational, right? I mean, can you? You know, it'd probably be a good trade candidate, but he's also a guy that if you got him on the wire, I think you already just got so much value added. I don't know. And he's a catcher. That throws a wrench in everything. How good is your catching situation?
Yeah, I think
if you are like me and me and you have Cal Raleigh and Liam Hicks, I'm not trading away Liam Hicks. No, hold on.
If you combine those two, you have an average of 250. That's incredible. the interesting thing I think about what you just said was profiting, you know, without considering trading because you know off guys that you've picked up off the waiver wire. I think it'll be a really fun discussion as we move closer to the fantasy trade deadline and the real life trade deadline to discuss a little bit of theory and how we approach shallow league trading because it is a little different than deep leagues where you want to maximize the value of guys that you picked up off the wire because there's probably not much that you can do out there now, whereas shallow leagues, there's always somebody. So you can be a little bit riskier in your trading. So I think that'll be a really interesting discussion to have in a couple of weeks as, like I said, we approach the trade deadline. Now, those are the hitters. That's where they are now. Next up, we're going to do pitchers when we come back. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm watching you point.
you're throwing me off.
I know. I don't know if you've noticed, but when we come back for the third segment, I always start with me first because I've set you up for the previous two. Anyway,
I have to remember
it
mirrors.
Took me.
Anyway, none of this matters for audio listeners.
No, it doesn't. For those of you on YouTube, it took me a minute to realize like we are not actually reversed when we record this. So like I can actually point in that direction and it points at you. We see when we're recording what you see, which is fun. So this is where they are now, pitchers edition. Again, these are early season darlings and where they are now, who stuck around, who faded into obscurity, and who might make the leap or plunder in the second half. These names you might find interesting here. First up, we've got burgeoning ace, Max Meyer. Where is he now?
I love Max Meyer. Yeah. I love Max Meyer so much. I think he is one of the best pitchers in baseball, bar none. He is outstanding. He is a pitcher that is not getting the attention he deserves still. He is really excellent. Every time I do the first pitch podcast, it seems like he always pitches on my days. And I look at the pitch grades for him and it's like A plus stuff and like pretty solid locations. And it usually works out really well. A lot of the peripherals love him. And he's still young and he's still like developing as a player. Great. Absolutely fantastic. No notes. Love Max Meyer so much.
Are you a little worried about his innings total?
What, like lack thereof?
I know the Marlins are competitive, right? So
sure.
Yeah. They're actually good. In our last show, we had the Marlins as a thing. So are you worried that in any way, if they do start to fall off, that they maybe shut him down? Because he's at a career high in innings, almost doubling last year's total even. Are you worried
his per start innings is still not crazy. Yeah. And they're in the thick of this. I am not scared at all really about his mileage or usage. I think, you know, if anything, I think I'm concerned if they use him too much. They might keep their foot on the gas. That's the only thing I'm concerned about with Meyer as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. So where is he now? He is a burgeoning ace. And I believe on the list that we got a preview of this week's The List from Nick, I believe he's top 20, if not top 15. Did I see that? I'm trying to navigate in.
I would have to check.
Yeah, I'm checking that.
Do that a little later while you're reading who the next pitcher is.
I'm checking it right now. He's listed at number 18. That's pretty cool. You know who's listed higher than that? My guy, Cam Schlittler. Where is he now, Carson?
He is, I think, still the front runner for the American League, Cy Young. Dylan Cease is nipping at his heels, but it is Cam Schlittler's to lose. And the most dangerous last name in baseball has a phenomenal array of fastballs. That's really interesting. He throws fastball, sinker, cutter. I don't know pitchers that it's very unconventional.
Yes.
Very strange and very effective. A kind of like amped up east-west profile. Very interesting. And really effective. If it's hard to like put into framing, but he uses those pitches differently than like your idea of a fastball, really. And it works outstanding for him. He basically has a really hard slider, a really hard changeup, and a four-seamer.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love how he just says, here, hit it. You can't. I love it. I've said that all season. I said that in the preseason. Cam Schlittler says, here, hit it. You can't. And you can't. He's been phenomenal. I am not worried about an innings limit there, just because we are talking about a young guy in his first full season in the major leagues. Cam's a big dude. He is 6'6", 215.
He's enormous.
He is a big boy. And he pitches like one, too. So I'm a big fan. Happy to have him on my team. love the most dangerous last name in baseball. When my mouth doesn't mouth, I have to be very careful about saying his last name, especially when we are recording. Next up on the list here, a guy who plays for Cam. See, had to be careful there. Schlittler's hometown team, the fan base that gives him the most agita, let's say, on social media, and that is the Red Sox and Peyton Tolley. Where is he now?
He is currently one of my favorite pitchers, not necessarily just in how he pitches, like, which is really good, but he's also, I don't know if you've seen it, he's one of the most fun pitchers in baseball, like off the mound. Dude's a bundle of charisma. He's really funny, and he's really like, he's just got a great attitude about things. The Red Sox are having a dismal season, and they've been really hot until recently. I still don't really believe in them, but that's okay. We'll talk about that in a later episode.
Every team can go on a small winning streak.
Yeah. But the Red Sox, for at least most of the season, have been in dire straits, and Peyton Tolley has been really just kind of, let's get him, guys. And he's been, honestly, if the Red Sox do end up turning this around, I think Tolley's going to have a lot to do with it, not only with his on-the-field performance, but his just mental resolve has been excellent. I'm really impressed by what I've seen with Tolley. I was impressed, like, coming into the season. There was a lot of hype around him. He was a very high-ranking prospect, and he's delivered on it, absolutely. Another guy who's huge, who has just a large physical presence on the mound, and he's an intimidating pitcher that is very composed. That's a scary thing.
Yeah, he's a big boy. Jordan Walker, 6'6", 250. Peyton Tolley, 6'6", 250. Big boys. Big humans. I'm not small myself. I'm 6'4", 250. These are big guys. They are big. These are the most awesome thing about this is that, you know, people who don't like baseball, they go, oh, you can play baseball and be out of shape. These are big guys. They're not out of shape. Okay. They are athletes, as they say in the movie. Is it Benchwarmers? I think it's Benchwarmers. Athletes. Love me some Peyton Tolley. I think he's been fantastic. We have not seen the ceiling yet. I think he can get even better than he is right now, especially with some of his secondaries. The fastball is dominant. If he can just, you know, maybe get a third pitch up to the level of his, I think it's a slider, right? Is what he throws. If he can just get a third pitch I think he'll just take it to another level. All right, next up we have two players, one on the IL, one who I just don't understand at all. But where are they now? It's Michael Soroka and Parker Messick.
Soroka is doing well and not in a way that has me believing, or most people, frankly, believing in a lot. But I think certainly if you've picked him up, you've been very happy with the production you've gotten. I think Soroka does a lot of things pretty well, and perhaps there's some regression coming. But overall, he does a thing that I do like a lot, and it's the pitching that's very much like low walk rate, decent, like low walk rate and getting them to chase and being able to be, if you're not able to throw it in the zone and make them whiff and just punish them in the zone and overpower them, being able to be precise and being able to get them to expand that style of pitching, the finesse pitcher, you know, that's something he's done really well this year. He's continued to do it in through June and through July, you know, as we are now mid-July. It's still crazy.
I know, wild.
Way underway. Remember we were doing this back in February?
I do. We were like, man, the season's long. It's like, well, actually, it's almost over. what I really like about Soroka is he actually came out and said the Cubs, I think it was the Cubs, right, that he was on last season, one of the teams. They made me better. They showed me how to do certain things, and I've kept that going, and it's made me better. I'm not the same pitcher I used to be. And I love that he is aware that he has changed and adapted and evolved, and there's no ego there. That's somebody who's coachable. I love hearing guys who have made it to the top of their profession still say, hey, I can learn and I can get better. I love that. How old do you think, I'm asking the listeners, Carson, you might know, how old do you guys think Michael Soroka is? Carson, how old is Michael Soroka?
Yeah, he's 28.
That's nuts.
You know, it seems like he's been around a lot, but remember, he came up with the Braves super young.
20. And he was 20.
Yeah. So, he's come back and been and good for him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who had some devastating injuries to his legs, if I'm not mistaken. He tore his Achilles. He did not pitch in 2021 and 2022, and he only pitched 13 innings in 2020 and 32 innings in 2023. That's just like, to overcome that and be an effective major league pitcher over the last few seasons and a decent one this year is incredible. Love that. I hope he comes off the IL and has a really good second half of the season. Parker Messick, Carson, where is he?
Someone, I don't know if it's going to be, it's probably not going to be me, but someone needs to write an article about Parker Messick's fastballs, and someone probably already has, but they are performing extremely well considering they do not have extraordinary properties. It's not thrown very hard and it doesn't have a ton of movement, and it's and just like the normal things where like, why is this fastball so good, doesn't really like make sense. Certainly doesn't make sense why his fastball has a 27% whiff rate and 35 strikeout rate. Like, it's just a run value of 19. It's been crazy good. He's a southpaws can get away with stuff, but it's been an outstanding season so far for Parker Messick. And I question if it goes, if it continues, you know, like the peripherals are in your FIP, your Sierra, your XERA, all that jazz. Those are all going to like it. Whether you believe in the actual pitches, that's a different story. This is where pitch modeling versus traditional in quotes, peripherals can be a little interesting. And your mileage may vary. This isn't the podcast to do all that analysis, frankly. But Parker Messick, if you picked him up earlier in the year, or drafted him, or what have you, done well.
Parker Messick over 151 and two-thirds innings in the major leagues. That's 26 starts. He has a 2.73 ERA and an 8.78 K per nine. I, like you, don't understand him. He shouldn't be this good, and yet he is. I guess there's probably some deception in his movement to the plate. But yeah, I guess he's going to be good-ish. Would you sell him? I would, because I just don't, like, nothing computes for me for him.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I would. I just, it doesn't, I think he is overperforming, and I don't think I see this kind of, he's performing like a high-end starter. I do not think he is. In a shallow league kind of thing, he seems like a back-end rotation guy that's currently being valued at a mid-rotation.
That, to me, screams sell and profit off the sale. We're going to wrap it up right there. Those are players, both hitters and pitchers, and where they are now. I do believe most of the names on this list will be relevant in the second half, including Jordan Walker, Sal Stewart, Jake Bowers, and Ben Rice. The others, maybe not when it comes to hitters. Pitchers, Max Meyer, Cam Schlittler, Peyton Tolley, Michael Soroka, I think are all going to matter tremendously in the second half. And Parker Messick maybe can matter for somebody else. Sell him. So like I said, we're going to wrap it up right there. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. To make sure you don't miss it, or any episode for that matter, please subscribe. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a question for us to answer right here on the pod, reach out to us on social media, leave a comment on YouTube, hit us up on the PL Discord, or email us at theshallowspod@gmail.com. He's Carson Picard, at Carson Picard on Blue Sky. I'm Eric Hendrickson, at Eric Hinn on Blue Sky and Twitter. That's Eric with a K, reminding you that murky waters are fine if you know how to swim. See you next time in the shallows.
Take care, you guys.